Welcome back. This is the Paula Gordon Show, conversations with people at the leading edge, of whom Haynes Johnson is one of those leaders. And in a serious kind of way, what you and Bill Russell have been talking about, we have to begin to voice those things. It has to be authentic, objective, as you talk about what is the role of the reporter. One of the things that I found in the age of anxiety, when you're talking about McCarthyism to terrorism, was a keener sense that we could very well have become a fascist state had Joe McCarthy not imploded.
Yeah.
That this is not irrelevant to what happens when a demagogue gets and people follow him. It could very well have been that McCarthy could have turned us into a different country. I mean, or you look at the general.
He did turn us into a different country.
Yeah,
right.
I agree with that. And the danger was there, and the imprint was there, and it's a lasting legacy. It's a corrosive legacy still with us today, and we better understand that and how it happened and what lessons that should be learned from it and how to respond to it.
It's interesting to me that McCarthy and MacArthur, it's always hard for me to keep my tongue on turn, they both have this strain that is a very appealing in America.
You're talking about Douglas MacArthur.
Yeah. Yes, Douglas MacArthur, of course. And Joe McCarthy was, when he was at his height, he was the most powerful political figure in the United States. And he sowed terror not only in the populace, but he also sowed terror in both the Republican and the Democratic Party and the press and so forth and the campuses. So this power kept rising. We are thankful, we were lucky that his own excesses, his own ego, and his own drinking. He died tragically, an alcoholic strapped down with DTs, and it was a really sad. He was a young man, 47 years old, and he just destroyed himself. But had he not, I mean, he was headed, he wanted to be president of the United States. And Eisenhower understood that. He said, I will run against this guy if I have to. I will run again or whatever it takes to do the, not let Joe McCarthy be president, although he wouldn't say that public at the time.
I want to benefit from your years in the media because for all the public, it did not behave particularly well, and the political system didn't work particularly well. The media, as you say repeatedly, failed us in many different ways. And you go on to look at the current environment where we've gotten ourselves into a balanced, somebody lying aggressively on one side and somebody lying aggressively on the other side, and somehow or other that represents objectivity, that represents news.
I'm so glad you said that because I have always had nothing but contempt and outrage at this idea. I'm just an objective truth teller. All I do is lay out the line and I just tell the truth. I balance it. I give an objective statement here. Then you make this outrageous charge. Then I'll say someone says it's not so. And then, but I'll never question it. I'll never try to determine the truth of the charge. I'll just say this was the charge, and then of course the more outrageous it is, the more prominence it gets in the news coverage. So this is supposed to be objective, balanced, fair, and balanced reporting. It's not.
It's like feedback loop. I mean, screaming gets louder and louder.
I think that, and it's interesting because I didn't appreciate fully, as bad as the press was during the McCarthy period, there was some tremendous reporting that was done, and it did create over time a climate of opposition to McCarthy that affected his standing. And that was, but I have to say, in the last 5 years, it has been almost, until the very recent hurricane, as I said earlier, it has almost been a quiescent stand back, support the president, don't challenge their premises.
Well,
if you didn't read the New Yorker, Harper's, or the Atlantic, you had no idea that there was another voice to be heard.
Or the Internet. The Internet has, there has been,
that's right,
thank God for what is effectively independent media, which doesn't, essentially doesn't exist. In the mass media, I'm sure you hear this more than you want to. People tune into The Daily Show, to Jon Stewart on Comedy Central.
Oh, absolutely.
To get their news.
Because it has an authenticity. It's saying something fresh, and humor can be a deadly device and a wonderful one. It's an old American device. It's to poke fun at the pompous, the leaders, the godlike figures that say they're going to lead us into the future. And that was absent. It takes someone like the Stewart or whatever it is.
But 30 minutes. a night in a 24-hour news cycle on the Comedy Channel, and this is where we're, you know, people, and literally, I can't tell you how many people, I'm sure you have the same experience, yeah, exactly. Go to that for their surcease, I think is what they're going for.
Yes, going that's true.
So how do we fix that?
Well, I wish I had the answer. I am a believer, ardently, passionately, that you do it by understanding the lessons of the past and be candid. And it means people, whatever responsible position you hold, whether it's in the media or in politics or the public, it's in your own self, not nobility. Forget about democracy. I don't mean to diminish it. It's in your own self-interest to protect yourself and your children and your country from the excesses that can divide us and lead us into wars and terrible events. So I think it's incumbent on all of us to have a role. That's the challenge of democracy, you said earlier. That's really what it's about.
I went back. My understanding, actually, you can answer this. My understanding is something like 2,300, 2,500, 2,600 reporters accredited to the White House.
Yes.
Many of them.
Or maybe more than now.
Probably about that. This goes back 2 or 3 years. And I went and looked, and I can't believe this, but I went and looked to see what the number was during the Roosevelt years. And the report was there were 3 or 4 accredited reporters to the White House. They could go sit in the Oval Office, talk to the president, get some idea of what's going on. With these multiple thousands of, many of them, highly paid reporters who appear to the outside to be taking dictation from someone they know is at the very least not telling them the full truth and may in fact be occasionally lying to them. I find it amazing that we know so little about what's actually going on.
The stage setting, the manipulation, the whole this term spin doctors, that's a fairly new age. To spin used to be a top, you spin something. Now it means lying, and it means deliberately setting out to manipulate opinion through the power of your government agency, your White House, or your office, whatever it is, and you deliberately do it. You have a campaign to use the media to get your point of view, and it has now been enshrined, and it is hardly challenged, and it was until fairly recently was not challenged at all. And that is, you talk about, when I came to Washington, this is old times, but you could go in the Oval Office with the president. You stand in front of his desk. I remember with Lyndon Johnson, it was absolutely, the Lyndon Johnson the American public saw on television, soulful, penitent, I'm just your humble president.
It was never a convincing
act.
The
Lyndon Johnson you saw behind the desk, he would stand up, was a big man with big hands and big ears, and he would lean forward, his eyes would flash, and he'd make incredible in some body, and he'd take on this and that. That was an incredible performance, and that was the real Lyndon Johnson. The public didn't see that. And now it's all stage managed. We talked about the Reagan era, but they all do. It's not just Reagan. This is, you have these, quote, spin doctors who come on to manipulate and manage the news. And it is now enshrined. And I think the public understands that now. And they're turned off so they don't listen to anything, unless it's maybe the Comedy Central or something like that. So I think there's a real challenge for the media and to do a better job.
The internet does offer some hope on that.
It does. It's both good and bad, because the internet is a wonderful free, that's what, challenge, outrageous. The one problem with the internet and the blogs, which can be wonderful, they can really challenge and find new information in a way that nobody else, to the shame of the press, they didn't do. At the same time, they may be outrageously false. And there's no accountability for some of the material that comes over. And that's the kind of a problem we'll sort out down the road. But it's a value for the democracy to have these independent voices raising criticism. That's what it's all about. We come from a tradition in this country of being very, very critical of our leaders for good reason. I mean, if you go back and look at what was said about Adams and Jefferson, it was incredible. And Lincoln, the ape baboon of the prairies, that was the press of the time. There wasn't a nicely little, nice, kiss, kiss, kiss. That didn't exist.
I went back and read a history of the 1800 election,
yeah,
which I'm sure you've gone through in some detail. It's about as ugly as anything I've ever seen.
And if you know, Bill, if you look at those cartoons that existed then, I mean, Jefferson was a lecher and a drunk and sitting on bags of barrels of rum and Mad Tom and so forth. Unbelievable. I mean, in today's climate, I mean, they're much more severe, much more outrageous, much more savage than anything we have now. So that was our, what happened?
That's our genealogy.
It is in our DNA. Yeah. Is to challenge authority and power. And I am not about to say that we won't be doing that again. I hope if the lessons are learned about the dangers we're in and how it happened, and to be wary of abuses of power, that's why you do books like this. You hope, immodestly, that maybe you make a contribution.
This is Haynes Johnson. We'll be back for a few more minutes with him when we return. Please be with us.